Good morning, wonderful listeners. You've tuned into Post Session Podcast, a podcast filled with the stoke of a surf session and the wise guidance of an ocean voyager. Your water-loving hosts are ready to share this infectious state of mind while encouraging and inspiring you
for your next adventure.
Press record.
Okay.
One more time. Let's do pop a seed.
I pop a seed in my toothless.
Pop a seed in my toothless.
And I'm not going to fall for it.
He didn't push record yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see.
Ashley, go
ahead. I pop a seed. My toothless.
I'm
going to talk about this right here.
Oops.
Perfect. Our injustice of the week's pretty cool. We weren't going to punish you and make you bring another one.
Well, he might have brought one. So we should compare.
But I can always make up. There's like nine million.
We got a good one.
All right. Welcome back to Post Session Podcast. Because we enjoyed our conversation with Dave Baker so much last time, we decided to have him back.
Whoop, whoop.
And he accused us of being gluttons for punishment for having him back. And I hope that our listeners out there do not agree with that sentiment. Today, we kind of want to talk about a full life because this fella, you know, there were the reason we really had him back was because A, we really like him.
We like Dave.
But also, there's so much going on in his resume that he sent us that we just kind of scratched the surface. So
he's not just a lifeguard.
No.
He's not just good looks and baggies.
We're not talking about a gray hair lifeguard. We're going to talk about the full life a little bit and kind of what that looks like.
Yeah.
Extracurricular activities, all these kinds of fun things. You know what?
And not what you're thinking, people. Extracurricular activities. Wait, what are you thinking?
What are you thinking? Why do you have to be weird sometimes?
I just do.
All right, Laura, what are we? Just bring us through the table.
Okay, so of course, we are going to start with some post-session notes so we can talk about what we've done in the water this week or today or last week and share a little bit of water time. And then we're going to move into the injustice of the week.
Week.
Yeah.
There he goes.
And we're going to dive a little deeper with Dave. Uh-huh. That just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
And then we'll drift into some God waters, wrap it up with a little homework. I don't know who brought that today, but
it wasn't me. Not it. Dave.
I'll figure something out.
Yes. All
right. Absolutely.
He'll dig deep. All right. So post-session notes. You know, we normally talk about what's happened in the water. I want to just throw a question out there that relates to our theme.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of weaving people's professional lives with the things that they like to do after work and the things that create a more full life, a full experience. And for someone like you, Dave, who works on the water, and I mean, that's like a big part of your life. Is there anything you do outside of the ocean on your time off, or are you just eating up with vitamin C?
I am definitely eaten up with vitamin C. However, I really enjoy photography. Mm-hmm. I'm also a frustrated artist, so I'm working on watercolor now. I really want to explore that and do some, you know, work. I've done a little bit, and it's looking pretty. I'm okay with it. And then,
that's a good start, that you don't hate it right away.
No. And then looking at things with the object that I'm painting and then coming up with a story.
Mm.
And
so you're
doing
writing.
That. So just little.
With pictures.
With just little, you know, three paragraphs real quick.
Oh, yeah.
To bring about and connect it all to maybe get you to stop and think.
Yeah.
So in your watercolors, are you painting an object that you have in front of you, or are you painting from your imagination?
No, or from your photography.
Yeah, definitely from my photography.
From the photography.
Yeah. And it's definitely going to be a water theme.
Of
right.
course.
Well, if you guys have not listened to the first episode, which I'll link back to in the show notes, we put in our resources column a link to Dave Baker's Instagram.
which is page? Also on our Instagram.
Yeah, DB Photographic Art, right?
Correct.
He has some super sweet pictures. And listen, I'm not one to indulge people because everyone is a budding photographer and everyone
with
has
their
that
iPhone.
Yeah, and here's that sunset shot. Yeah, seen it. But anyway, I'm a little bit of a hater. But I thoroughly enjoyed mining your photos for content for the show notes page. So I encourage you guys to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you post up some of these watercolors?
Yeah.
You scared?
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
He's not ready.
I'll show you guys some and, you know, we'll share this. I'll pull it up while we're talking. And
yeah.
Yeah.
We'll, you know, get there. But it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. And the photography, I've been there since a kid.
It with the theme that Dave just posed, mm-hmm. Laurel, maybe you're not talking about surf in post session notes. Maybe you're talking about some of your artistic endeavors because you are a serious writer.
Oh, well, thank you. Ashley's actually read my first book.
A couple times.
That's right, twice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was actually going to mention that since obviously I've told you guys I work in mental health, but the ocean is the theme of this podcast is something I love to do. This that we're doing, Ashley, is an extracurricular activity.
Totally.
And yeah. And so movies, done a little documentary that I got to submit to Kukaloris and the Rincon International Film Festival was called Any Given Morning. We'll soon be offering it on our website that you can purchase it.
Well, hopefully by the time they listen to this, it's already on there.
Dang straight.
Yeah.
And then Ashley and I, Post Session Podcast, is going to produce a ocean film, themed film. We will not say what it is yet.
You just let the cat out of the bag.
But it's top secret what it's going to be about. Ocean.
Okay, well.
Waves.
Can I just give a little. No. But we would like to enlist
Dave's help for sure.
Yeah, on one part of it.
Yeah. We've already got absolutely. A little part.
We've got
you.
A role for you. Yeah.
We'll make you famous.
Yeah.
You want to be famous? No Baywatch slow motion, though. We can't do it. We can't pull it off.
Dang it. So that's, I mean, for water this week, I have been out of the water. I got to go in, surf a little bit on a choppy, sloppy, not so great day on a tiny board that just didn't work. I have two boards that are out of service. I had a fin hatchet into my other board. It wasn't seated and they didn't have it screwed in to their board and it flew out and landed bottom side in and completely submerged itself like it was in a fin box in my board. So thank God it wasn't my head.
Whoa.
Totally. Well, why don't you just get one of our shaper buddy friends to glass that junk back together.
Well, hey, my girl Hannah, who's going on the Post Session Podcast surf trip to Puerto Rico, is working on it or is going to be working on it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do mine. Let's mention later our free event.
Yeah, coming up.
Okay, anyway, let's see. For me on the water, I have been out of the water this week. Yeah, I guess Ren has a... yeah.
You looked a little scaly, you know? It's you're drying up.
Yeah, I'm getting... I'm like Mother Gothel and Rapunzel when the flower disappears. That you guys know what I'm talking about, obviously.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, yeah, so I've been out of the water. We are negotiating. I'm helping to train this guy right now. Who has some goals, freediving goals.
Like and, record goals?
Well, that's between us, Laurel.
Okay.
But anyway, we're talking about getting together and doing some training. I just found out that our Cenotes Adventure Mexico trip will be happening this year. I'm totally Sweet. Pumped about that. We're going to the Florida Springs in November. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that. But my water activity this week has... basically been relegated to Ani's sailing lessons.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we bartered some free diving lessons for sailing lessons, and she is digging it. You would think we would be able to teach her to sail.
Yeah.
But basically, when Ren tried last, they both came back crying. And she's really digging
Sensitive.
It. Yeah, well, yeah, they just...
Butted heads.
But
it's always nice for... you to be taught by somebody besides, I mean, your parents teach you so much.
Everything. Yeah, it's really nice. Trust me. And this guy, Cameron, down at Blockade Runner is absolutely amazing. If anybody out there has kids and they want them to do some sailing lessons, please contact me, Ashley at postsessionpodcast.com, and I'll connect you with Cameron because he is the bomb.
Cool. Yeah.
I know Cameron. Oh. Great guy.
He's so great. He's so nice. And he just does a really good job with Ani. It starts with a little lesson, mm-hmm. you know, and then he makes her help him rig the boat and do the whole thing. They go out sailing. There is a carrot dangling at the end of the stick. It's a ice cream trip, a sail trip to go get ice cream at some point in the future when she masters a few skills. So, hello, motivation.
Nice. Absolutely.
He's provided it all.
I bet Dave knows just about everybody on the beach.
I'm sure.
Unfortunately, no. I know a lot of faces mm-hmm. and a lot of people know who I am, but if you know me, you have my cell phone number.
Yeah. Well, you probably see everybody wet. So once they're dry, they're probably unrecognizable. They're
absolutely. Even the girl lifeguards will have a big dinner at the end of the season and they get dressed up.
And you're like, who
is that?
Yeah. Take a few layers. Oh, now I got it. That's funny. Injustice?
Yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah. Are you ready for the injustice?
Oh, I'm so ready.
We didn't make Dave bring it today. So.
No, you're welcome, Dave.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. But you
get to participate.
Oh, in absolutely.
The conversation.
On this.
I'm expecting to hear from him first.
Okay, we'll bring it.
Okay, so the injustice of the week, the secrecy of Masonboro. So why the crap does everyone feel like Masonboro is some secret spot and that they own it? People have this serious, intense kind of ownership. I don't know.
Like this top secret, you know, don't tell anybody about the surf spot.
Yeah, don't be posting that picture, man.
When there's 50 boats when I arrive one morning.
50 boats.
Oh, I know. And to give people credit for 15 years ago, 16 years ago, it was less populated. Mm-hmm. However, it's not a secret, people. All you got to do is just look left and right and you're counting 100 people.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. However, there are places on the beach just the other day when Masonboro was going off at the secret spot.
Air quotes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was 100 people there. You could go to this other place. It was maybe just a wee bit smaller.
Yeah.
And there was only 20 people. And only they were 20. Having... so that's much nothing. Fun. They didn't have to wait for a wave. They could catch every wave they wanted.
Ooh.
And they were having so much fun on that really gorgeous day. You thought you scored? No. These 20 people scored.
We'll talk about this after the podcast. I want to make sure I was one of the 20 people.
There's still secret spots out there then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there's places that have tiny parking lots. There's places that has a parking lot that doesn't have a bathroom. Your less desirable spots sometimes have a great sandbar.
Or places where there's no parking lot.
There's that.
Yeah.
But I know when I went to Mace, Ren gave me a ride over there.
Did you get permission?
Yeah. Ren gave me, your husband gave me
he
permission.
Has the authority to invite people to Masonboro? Okay.
No, but there was 50 boats when we arrived parked right in the little cove. And then when I got over, it was so packed. It was more packed than the south end at Crystal Pier on a great day. So that's pretty dang packed. And then by the time the sun came up and you're about to catch a wave because you're out a ways, but then there's a ton of shortboarders inside. It looks like a pinball machine that you have to somehow with a glare in your eye avoid.
Yeah, it's like playing Frogger. You know, I get that what you were mentioning in the very beginning that 15 years ago or whatever, it was quiet and people hold on to that. You know, they reminisce and they yearn for the past, mm-hmm. which the Bible really kind of urges us against mm-hmm. doing those things. But anyway, you have two options. Either embrace the fact that Wilmington's blowing up and roll with it and just teach people that are new our respect. Local etiquette and respect, right? Or go find your own secret spot somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I made Any Given Morning and I was talking to people about, you know, videotaping them or filming them out in the water. And there were a few people who were like, oh my God, no, word'll get out. Not that many people even surf there anymore. And it never blew up. Not from Any Given Morning, that's for sure. Not from my movie. But I mean, it still lends itself to being a quiet spot because there's not a lot of parking. But even still, even on a great day, it's not crowded and it's, I don't know. It wasn't a matter of people finding out about it that made it blow up. I think it was a matter of it being more difficult to get to. And I think Masonboro still has a lot more people would go if they had a boat or
absolutely. Access. But I think it's like anything. The secret spot is actually now almost a joke. Mm-hmm. It's like when Perfect. You say secret spot, you can say, oh, I'm going to the South End to, or we're going to Crystal Pier, mm-hmm. or we're going to be at Access, you know, 33 or Access
40.
It's just a name, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
and everyone knows.
Yeah.
And it's hard to come up with a better name for it. What are you going to say? Well, I'm First Cove, 200 yards to the east. No, you know, or Second Cove. So they've given it a name,
mm-hmm.
and it would be a, you know, the best secret not kept.
Oh, yeah. The best secret not kept.
That's what we should title this episode.
Yeah.
The best secret not kept. You know, it's probably time to go ahead and flush this down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
However, just a little reminder for all you Wilmingtonians out there. The people from Charlotte and Raleigh have found out that Wilmington exists. So it's time that we embrace it, love our neighbors, and
teach them
our ways.
Teach them well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. Just be kind. Share. We got to share. Flush that stuff.
Flush it.
Rin, put that little
fleshy
toilet in there.
What are we doing now? Diving deeper?
Yeah, let's dive a little deeper with Dave.
All right. Well, you read it out because my computer is restarting spontaneously.
Well, Ashley
okay.
Has written, speaking of extracurriculars, we understand that you've done some work with the U.S. Secret Service, some safety things. We've heard some Iron Man safety things. He's even worked with the men jumping out of helicopters. So I want to hear about that. Can we start with that?
Tell us about your crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. I would go with Coast Guard helicopter rescue swimmers first.
Ooh.
And how do you even get there? I mean, somebody's like, oh, there's this guy in Rysel Beach. You should check him out.
Well, this was actually when I was in the Outer Banks.
Yeah, because the Coast Guard base is in Elizabeth City.
Well, you have the Elizabeth City, you have the helicopter crew and everything like that. There is the head guy, Jerry Hoover, at that time. He's written a book. It's really good.
Mm.
And
is it fiction or nonfiction?
No, it's about his exploits as a rescue swimmer.
What's it called?
It's The Fin, something like that. He
we'll
is
look it
the...
Up
At that time, had the most deployments as a rescue swimmer of all time.
Wow.
Just crazy stuff with Katrina being one of the largest rescues. So anyway, he realized that there was a lack in their training. They can do really, they're used to going in big water, but it's deep water.
Mm-hmm.
They're not used to working in the impact zone.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, looked us up, some of us, and we provided a lot of training with them and working in the impact zone and getting through it and working around just things they're not used to.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, getting helicopter rides with them, hanging off the wire, you're looking at stuff. And then probably the greatest thing for me was the centennial flight for the Wright brothers.
Oh, yeah.
I got to play a downed aviator. The helicopter came in. My buddy Brew came down on the wire, and it was a gnarly, like, 100-foot lift. And it was so much fun. And we just go flying off on the wire as they reel us up for the demo we did for the centennial.
Oh, that's so cool. So wait a minute. Were you in costume?
Oh, yeah. I had the flight suit, the helmet.
The period flight suit. Wow.
Yeah, and everything. So it was not for Wright Brother time. This was, you know, what's going on and all the different things that aviation has provided since the Wright Brothers.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Is there a video of that somewhere?
There probably is.
We need a link.
And then just going out with them on training missions because they needed victims.
Mm-hmm.
They have Oscar the dummy. Well, I became Oscar the real guy. So we would go flying offshore and they would drop me off and then they would take off and they come back and look for you and find you and deploy the swimmer and let them practice and do all different things that they need to train on. And Jerry Hoover was instrumental in getting that all done.
Wow.
That sounds fun.
I know. And so why would, like, so Coast Guard, they were practicing in the impact zone. Why would they be that close to shore? Or maybe it wouldn't be close to shore.
Well, you got to remember that you have them picking off people in a storm that could be on rock jetties. There's different sea states, everything. Jerry just felt that it was a true need in their training to get used to working in these, you know, situations that they never have worked in, because usually it's miles out to sea, but anything can happen.
Sure.
And they may find themselves in that situation.
Impact zone. So when you were flying, when they were taking off and you were on the line, were you on a stretcher thing or were you just kind
of? Oh, no, I was in a harness, just clipped in.
Oh,
that's much fun.
Oh, man.
That sounds like really, really fun, but also scary.
Yeah, a little throw up.
A little.
One of the great things is they give you a lot of training prior to doing that. Uh-huh. And
are you, like, clipped with another person though?
Not on that one we were for the centennial. But other times when they're dropping you off as a civilian, mm-hmm. you are not allowed to jump out of the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to low you on the wire to mm-hmm. put you in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing that, there's a lot to know because you have no contact mm-hmm. with the helicopter. So you're watching the flight mechanic. He's giving you signals. And if he's kind of pounds his hands together, that means they're going to be cutting the cable
mm-hmm.
and you're dropping into the water because there's aircraft malfunction.
Right.
So there's lots of things you need to remember to do. You swim off in this direction, the helicopter peels off this direction. When you hit the water, make sure you keep on going down because if they have external fuel tanks, they're dropping them too.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that means when you drop, instead of trying to come back up right away, you just let it go, let it go, let it go, let it go, let it go.
And you just keep on going down.
Yeah.
And then you swim, you know. Yeah. Like you go 10, they go 2, you know, things cool. like that.
So I've always wondered, like, what they're supposed to do. Like, you know, if you've been dropped, you've come out of an aircraft and the plane's coming down or the helicopter's coming down. Like, how do you get away from... I mean, I guess that's part of the training because it could be that kind of incident.
Oh. Yeah. And for that, you know, that was our training to do this. And you know that they may leave you there.
Okay.
But if they can, they'll kick you out a little raft. If not,
you have a floaty.
They've marked it. Someone's going to come.
Mm-hmm. What do they mark it with?
Oh, GPS. You know, they're talking on the radio. Yeah. They're saying, yeah, we're in a situation.
I thought
they
drop like yellow paint around you in a circle.
You know, I have a friend, a sailor friend, who capsized in his trimaran.
Mm.
And luckily, the EPIRB that he never serviced, it functioned properly.
What's the EPIRB?
EPIRB. It's this, what is it?
It's an electronic personnel indicator buoy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you press the button and it sends your GPS coordinates to Coast Guard. Anyway, he didn't know. He hit the button and he didn't know if it worked or not because, like I said, he hadn't had it serviced or anything. He was just hoping it worked. And sure enough, a little bit later, he's holding on to the rudder. The boat's upside down. He's just holding on to the rudder, hoping somebody comes. And a plane flies by. Zoom, and he's like, oh, God, thank God. And, you know, they're marking his spot. They go out and then a helicopter comes out with a basket. And he gets to take a ride in the basket.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
I mean, bad situation.
Terrible. But... yeah, he lost his boat, which is crazy. And after that, Ren actually painted the underside of our wing deck on our trimaran orange, bright orange, so that if it ever turned.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Bright
really
orange.
Good.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. But anyway, you know, we should talk about this later, Laurel, but I think there's a book in that story, at least a part of a book.
Yeah,
anyway,
absolutely.
It's a pretty awesome story.
Well, another thing. So what we've heard, you did something with the Secret Service. What was that, training maneuvers?
This was also in combination with the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
They have a division called Walrus. Called Water, Air, Land, Sea, United States Secret Service.
Oh.
Everybody's into their acronyms.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah. SEALs.
And so they would show up.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, they would be deployed with dignitaries. At this time, you had the Bush twins wanting to go down to Key West and swim. You had... Grandpa Bush, you know, he had his fast boats. You had all this. And so these individuals would be there and needed the training once again on how to make rescues, how to work in impact zones, and just go about doing things in a dynamic environment, instead of pool environment.
Okay. So this was also helicopter work?
This was groundwork and in the water back and forth. And then they would go to Elizabeth City and then they would get their helicopter work.
Okay. I got to go up in a helicopter.
Really?
Yeah. When I was working on a movie down in the Keys. And at the end of Zeus and Roxanne was the little kid movie with the dog and the dolphin that communicated. And so we did a helicopter shot over the 7 Mile Bridge. And it was Steve Guttenberg riding a Harley. And so we kind of follow him. And so we had the camera, you know, the DP was strapped in and I had the little headset on. And
now they would just use a drone.
Yeah.
Funny how things change. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you were turning the Secret Service guys into water people, too, so that they had some...
Yeah, it's just giving them insight so they can do their job better. And the side story on all that is these guys are truly phenomenal interrogators in that you don't... Every time I would train them and afterwards, I was going like, I just got interrogated and I didn't even know it. They would get, they'd
Is that
be,
you, them
it was a conversation. It was conversations and everything like that. And I'm going like, oh my God, they did it to me again.
It's like they give you a personality test and then size you up all in one conversation.
Oh, it's yeah. It's like, whoa.
Wow.
These guys are good. And it was a lot of fun. The head guy, Bill Curtis, he's retired now. And
yeah, because you told us his name.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. It's fine. You know, I don't have to, you know, there's some things I can't tell you, of course, you know.
What?
But Bill was an amazing guy. And he's really helped a lot of people in his career and done a lot of things for people too.
I'm sure those guys, I don't know, in my experience with, the special ops guys and stuff like that, I just find them to be extreme professionals, really sharp people, easily teachable, engaging, all those things.
Absolutely. And you just had to really tell them once.
Yeah.
Give and show them. And then, as you well know, both of you, water's a great equalizer.
Yeah, this is what I say. Yeah.
And you really find out a lot about the individual. And the ocean, and when it gets rough, really kind of open their eyes on them and their inability to do something.
How small we are compared to.
Right.
Or they're not who they have this persona on land that they're able to
manage any crisis.
Manage, right, and everything. But when they're confronted with a fear or a basic fear, yeah, all that goes out the window.
However, they were driven to get it right. And that was just one of the great things to see.
Oh, that's cool. Makes me wonder about when you've got your new lifeguards, and I mean, what is it that you say to them? I mean, I know you do your whole training that prepares them, but like, what kind of ways do you prepare them for managing stress and in life and death situations? Like,
one of the things we do at the very end of their 2 weeks of training, it's around 85 hours, is that we have this thing called the challenge, where we break everybody up into five-person teams, try to make them as equal, and they will run, swim. They will take everything that they've learned, and it'll be around 10 to 14 miles worth of exercising and 3 hours, you know, overall of swimming, running. And then when we get them super tired, we throw in major medicals and everything to give them a sense that everybody has their strengths in that group that they're working with, and that they may not be great at medical, but they're a fast swimmer, or you have someone that's a great runner, but collectively they have the strength to combine all of their knowledge to do the right thing for the individual. So never letting them feel that they're alone with a crisis situation. And if you really want to know what it's like just to be a part or to get on the team, you can go to Amazon Prime. And there's a documentary on Risal Beach Ocean Rescue.
Making the
squad.
Yeah, I think I have watched it.
I haven't, like, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to say, I wonder if I could do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do it, but could I?
And a great little tidbit. You'll see, and this is kind of a spoiler. You'll see an individual doing the run. He's the last guy coming in on tryout. He's hating life. He even has to stop and blow chow.
That's real.
And then he finishes. The guy wanted to be on the team so bad. He knew he wasn't going to make it.
Right.
2 years later, he lost 20 pounds. He got with other lifeguards and worked out and trained with them. And he came back and tried out again and rocked it.
That is awesome.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, his name's Jake Baker.
And
he is also a phenomenal skydiver and free fall.
Is he on the squad now?
No, he's actually getting his pilot's license.
Go, Jake Baker.
Yeah, he's a determined.
Yeah, he is.
He's a
phenomenal individual. And a lot of people have come through the program that have gone on and done great things, and really proud of them.
That's cool.
So I guess another thing that I wondered was, okay, so you've done all this training, but when it comes to maybe there's a person that you can't save, you know, or that drowned, or that, you know, died of lightning strike, or what's the process, you know, post the trauma or the tragedy, or
it actually starts prior to that, is that when you train, we say swim, let's just say a half mile, and then get out and run a mile, you know, for the morning workout. Take one more stroke than that half mile. Take one more step than that mile run. Know that you've done everything asked of you, plus a little bit more. Because you're going to be going out, and you may not be able to get to that person in time. Mm-hmm. But you have to be able to look in the mirror and say, I was prepared. I've done everything asked me, plus a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We can't save everybody. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It's not. We are put there to make a difference, but maybe there's a bigger plan that we do not have control over, and that it's time for that individual, mm-hmm. unfortunately, to not make it.
Right.
Afterwards, what we do is we have critical incident stress debriefing, mm-hmm. for...
I took that mm-hmm. class, a CISM class.
Yeah, and we definitely mm-hmm. Believe in it. It helps people work things out, and we always are checking on the people. My life experiences allow me, like, every now and then one of these will happen and it's like, yeah, it takes a little while to compartmentalize it and throw mm-hmm. it way mm-hmm. back in your brain so you don't have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. However, through critical incident stress debriefing, it allows the individual to know that there is an outlet, that there is no one's passing judgment mm-hmm. or anything like that. And this is the circumstances and you can talk about it. And you can talk with your peers. You can talk with a counselor. You can do anything, you know, that you need to get you squared away.
And it's probably important to do that. I mean, like, if those are the steps that's the norm to take, then you don't feel like, oh, I don't want to speak to a therapist because I have some hang up about it. But if that's kind of the normal process.
It's the process.
Then, yeah.
You know, I find that it's amazing what people can endure. Mm-hmm. Because when I contemplate different scenarios, seeing somebody die or having somebody close to you die, or these kinds of things, I think, oh my gosh, it's like the worst thing that could happen, and you'd be scarred, and how can you move on? Or people that lose children, you know, especially. I think that would be especially hard. But then when I'm confronted with these things, like my grandmother just died, mm-hmm. you know, that I was close to, and you think that this is just kind of destroy you, but you do end up compartmentalizing a little bit. Well, what I found personally anyway is that there's this grieving period that kind of you turn on and off, but you can turn it off and you can choose to just not go there and let mm-hmm. your mind go there, which I don't know if that's the healthiest thing to do, but it happens naturally. Or Ren, you know, he was in a rescue once, free diving. The guy died and he was, you know, doing compressions on him. And he was a friend, a close friend that sailed with us and everything else. Wow. And he just kind of put it in a place and didn't go back there. He did a lot of things to make it better. You know, a lot of good came out of that death, mm-hmm. that death for organized freediving, because they do all this extra training now and all of those things that were blind spots before because it just hadn't happened. Mm-hmm. However, I struggle and I think, did that really affect him and he's just not talking about it? Or did he really just put it in a spot and he's good with it and he can move on?
Well, I think in some ways also being in those situations, or for me, I haven't witnessed anyone dying. One of my coworkers has multiple times because of the pain medicine epidemic and that kind of thing. So, but also dealing with trauma with children that I do. But yes, there's some compartmentalization to, you know, keep going in life and to keep doing my job and to keep doing your job. But I also think that it provides something for us as well as this. And I think it may be just a hypothesis that part of Dave's extracurricular activities and this passion for a full life and exploring life and all the many facets that we get to do, whether it's art and music or podcasting and writing, but just recognizing the fragility of life and not taking life for granted.
Now you're saying that actually contributes to a fuller life to mm-hmm. have those experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And it reminds you, you know, life is short. It's a gift. Mm-hmm. And we need to embrace what our talents, what we can do, and to be able to get out there and some things make a difference, but also do those extracurriculars that you like. Yeah. So you can, it's truly an escape, and it brings you joy and a lot of happiness, and you can
share it just, with others.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a great segue.
Yeah.
Because now here we are talking about some of these extracurriculars that we were hoping to get to today. Because sometimes for people like you, Dave, or Laurel, I know you do a lot of cool stuff. I think Ren and I are pretty
cool too.
Yeah, we do some cool stuff too.
Yeah.
But what's the difference between having, because some people don't have all of those activities, and what's the difference between having a lot of activities that you enjoy and engaging in those, but just being busy? You know, because busyness isn't exactly a full life. Busyness can just be distraction. And
I think busyness comes from prioritizing poorly. Because I think when I think of busyness, I think of being behind.
Chasing your tail.
Being rushed, and then pursuing things that you're not deriving pleasure from, or deriving, that's not part of something that is meaningful to you. So you end up being busy with unfruitful things.
Right. It's not fruitful.
Yeah.
Busyness is doing things that aren't fruitful.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I don't know. What's
Dave say?
What do I say? Busyness is, you didn't prioritize right.
Mm-hmm.
You get yourself behind the eight ball. You procrastinated.
Mm-hmm. Not that I don't do
I do.
Oh, we all do.
I do my best work behind the eight ball.
And you get it done. Yeah. However, if you can stay in front of the eight ball and keep things going, then whether you just want to sit and read, you don't have to worry about, oh, I got this to do or this to do.
Mm.
You can enjoy that book.
Mm-hmm.
You can go out and sit on the beach and watch the waves or go surf mm-hmm. without feeling guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Do you always want to feel guilty that there's something else? But
crap, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like being able to enjoy the downtime. If you always have the white noise in your head because there's something you were supposed to do and haven't done. Right.
Right. We all have deadlines and there's always stuff going on. But who's really the most important person here? It's you. Take care of yourself.
It's all of you.
It's yeah.
You know what?
Absolutely.
I think that sometimes social media brings on a sense of busyness in people's lives, because it is hard to relax and sit back if you're seeing that, oh, well, Dave's taking he's getting his pilot's license now. Or, oh, well, Laurel, she's writing her second novel. I mean, we get wrapped up in what everybody else is doing that mm-hmm. we feel like we're being unproductive. But you know what? It's kind of dangerous. It's dangerous to go there and live there and have that constant sense of comparison.
And unfortunately, with social media the way it is and the generations now, that's, you know, they've grown up with this technology.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand, but it's only the perfect picture that goes on Instagram. It's only the great story, you know, that goes onto Facebook. It's not the trials and tribulations and the heartaches and like,
or sometimes people do, like, we will post sometimes the nitty gritty, but it's still the nitty gritty of the awesome stuff.
Yeah.
It's still like, oh, today was a struggle when I was in the Caymans diving. And let me tell you about my hardships, air quotes. Yeah. But we're not posting like, I just finished screaming at my two precious children and I feel this incredible sense of guilt mm-hmm. and regret and remorse. And how do I come back from it? We don't post those really deep personal struggles.
I mean, I work with a lot of teenagers and it's always a reminder for the, you know, like, remember when you're looking at your friend at the lunch counter at school or so-and-so and their parents, you're only seeing what's on the outside.
Yeah.
You are not seeing what's on the inside. And even though they look like they have it all together or they look like their life's great, they have the same struggles that you have. And remember, you're seeing the inside of you and you're thinking what a fake you are, or right. you know, you're
yeah,
it's
a
all
fraud.
For everyone to see mm-hmm. what a, you know, a chump you are. And but and then you're looking at the outside, judging everybody else by the outside, but you're judging yourself by the inside.
It's not apples to apples, is
no.
it?
No.
It's important to remind people, especially the younger generation, as you brought up, Dave, that grow up in this heightened sense, state of awareness about what everybody else is doing, that social media is largely pretend. It's largely mm-hmm. a kind of a fantasy world.
It's, well, that's why it sells. It's, you know, you're just like a commercial is,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
if you drink Bud Light, you're going to be skinny in a bikini and having fun on the beach and, you know, partying or whatever.
I love that commercial.
You're really in a trailer with your.
Oh, right? My gosh.
And just with this podcast and for me, it's going to come across, oh, wow, extrovert. I am the most introverted individual you have ever met.
Are you an introvert extrovert?
What's that?
That's what I think I am.
It's where when you have, like, this is small mm-hmm. and it's subject-based.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-threatening. It's okay. And you're getting information out to people,
mm-hmm.
which is really good. And that's what I do. I try to help people, you know. All the way for my job, saving them mm-hmm. or just giving advice.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask me to go to a party
mm-hmm.
and I know no one, but I, you know, except the person that invited me.
You're not going.
It's going to be some anxiety.
I'm not going to be there.
I'm going to take my L.
I may go there, walk through and walk out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
sneak out the back door.
The introvert, extrovert, this is how I kind of define it. You go to the party, for me anyway, I can turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
I can do a knee slide, you know, sing some karaoke.
You're an extrovert introvert.
Yeah, I'm an extrovert introvert. I can draw the crowd, but secretly I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I just like to be home. Oh my gosh, if I could just go home. Or oh my gosh, you have this, you get exhausted by the effort it takes
mm-hmm.
to be. You
turn
can
it on.
Do it. Right, but it's definitely a switch.
It's absolutely. Exhausting. And however, going to lifeguard dinner, you know, at an awards, that's fun. That's mm-hmm. everybody I know and,
right.
and everything. Mm. Small groups I can do, but anything large? It's just, it's too much noise.
Overwhelming. I feel that way sometimes too, though. I even though I'm an extrovert, I love having people over to the house
mm-hmm.
and, you know, let's do a bonfire. Let's make a gumbo. Let's hang out on the porch and drink
some
wine.
Yeah. Let's.
Yeah.
check.
But, you know, the idea of going to a party where there's a ton of people. Well, live music, I might.
Yeah, you, come on. That is totally
but
you.
But I feel like I still have anxiety that, you know, oh, I don't, you know, I might come up to a group of people that I kind of know and I'll be like, hey, da 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 da. But then I slink off, you know, like, okay,
see,
I hope I didn't offend or.
I think Ren is completely opposite of me because he comes off sometimes sort of as an introvert. He comes off as a little bit more quiet and reserved, but he is charged in a crowd.
Is he?
It charges him. Yeah, he's very good in a social environment where we know nobody and you're having to meet people. He is 100% at home.
Hmm.
Yeah, he just starts
but
talking
he has
people.
You there to help him
typically
to work off of.
Yeah, it does become the Ren and Ashley show sometimes.
I love no, the
no,
Ren
no,
and
no,
Ashley
no, no.
Show.
How about Ashley and Ren? Why do you have to go Ren and Ashley?
Oh, I don't know. Because I'm a misogynist secretly. I don't know. Why would it?
I'm just
come on,
pulling
Dave.
Your leg.
Come on, Dave.
Hey.
I was.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking, do we cover some, did we kind of cover some things here?
I feel
do
like
you
we
feel
did.
Complete? Are you living a full life? Is this the icing on the cake for you today?
This podcast? Is like the highlight of my day after the paddle this morning.
Yeah. Minus the paddle.
Dang,
that was probably a sunrise, right?
Yeah, got the sunrise.
He always catches the sunrise.
Yeah.
You want to tread into some God waters?
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah. We don't have to do a 2-hour sesh today.
Well, in thinking about extracurricular activities and kind of when our conversation moved to, you know, experiencing hard things, but really that only opens us up, I believe, to appreciating those extracurricular activities and not taking for granted what all the gifts that we've been given. I kind of landed on a little Romans.
Romans.
Yeah, Romans, the book of Romans in the Bible, and chapter 5. And we're going to start with verse 3. But right before Paul, who wrote this book, he says, you know, he's just told us that, hey, we've been made right with God. Mm-hmm. You've apologized for your wrongdoings. And that's all you have to do. Like, if you apologize for the things you've done wrong, they call it repent in the Bible, mm-hmm. that God completely forgives you 100%. There's nothing that he won't forgive you for. And it's
he's not keeping score.
Not keeping score. Completely open to arm every time you come, even if you come every day with the same damn thing.
He might want to kick you in the butt a little bit, though.
Hey, that's just us. But God, he's open arms. He wants you to, you know, obviously make better choices, and he'll help you do it. But anyway, but he's okay. Always there, open arms with forgiveness. So, but then it says, but not only do you get this, but we rejoice in our sufferings. So not only do we have all the eternal life and full forgiveness and God in us, not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And this hope does not disappoint, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. How about that? And I just wanted to, this is my keyword Bible, so it does have like a little description of what hope is. And so, you know, I'm always kind of like, okay, sure, suffering produces endurance because you're just going to keep going because you got to.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to have a choice.
And endurance, okay, produces character because, you know, if you do finally get to the other side, you're a little stronger. I think people who haven't gone through anything in their lives sometimes tend to be a little shallow, you know, don't have much depth to them, which comes from suffering mm-hmm. and some character building so that they have empathy towards others who might be going through something.
Yeah, your best training days are the hard ones because that's when you make gains. If every training day is easy, you're not.
There is no gain.
There's no gain. No pain, no gain, right?
And then character produces hope. So I was kind of like, okay, character produces hope. But what's that hope? What is hope? What's hope, Ashley?
Well, let's read it out of the keyword Bible, why don't we?
So the definition for hope is a confident expectation of good. Hopeful expectation. Like confident that the thing that you're hoping for is true, is good.
Mm-hmm. Expecting that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Expecting that it's...
Okay. So even on the other side of death, hardship, setbacks, suffering, pain, physical pain, emotional pain, we still have this hope and this a confident expectation of something good. Mm-hmm. That good being mm-hmm. loving God, how much God loves us, what he provides for us, how he completely wipes our wrongdoings away, makes us so we can have a good relationship with God without judgment, and we get to have eternal life with God.
Well, something that's interesting about that scripture that's opposite the world is that we see people losing hope and losing faith in times of suffering. Mm-hmm. But this is this scripture is saying exactly the opposite, that it's the suffering that in turn produces that hope mm-hmm. or fuels that hope. And Paul is no stranger mm-hmm. to suffering or preaching about the benefits of suffering. Not that we want people out there to suffer.
And you don't have to try and suffer.
No, you don't have to try and suffer.
It will find you.
It'll find you.
It will.
It'll hunt you down like a lion on the savannas of Africa. Rip your intestines out. And when it does, you're going to smile
and be hopeful. And tell yourself how great your character's going to be.
I've endured a lot.
Yeah. These claws feel good, actually.
What do you think, Dave? Do you see evidence of that in your life?
Well, on the repent and everything, you know, ask for forgiveness. There's a thing that I share with the lifeguards and everything. And it's a little off topic, but it's the 24-hour rule.
Okay.
Is that you're going to mess up sometime this summer. Mm-hmm. But I know this is one of the best jobs in the world because you get to make a difference and you have the skills to do that. I may be upset for 24 hours and that is it, because I want you to be able to come back to work knowing that it's over. We can't change what happened, but we can move forward. And if you see me coming down the beach, you're not going to be going, oh, he's going to be harassing me about this again and again. Mm-hmm. No, it's 24 hours and it's said and done. And we just move forward and we learn from it.
That's what a great
concept and way to put it into practice.
He puts a time limit on the suffering that the other lifeguards are going to experience externally anyway. They could be suffering on the inside and creating their own situation.
And that's it. It's over. In my mind, it is over because you can't change it.
And that's like,
but we can move forward and it gives them, they have the hope
that
it is not going
Papa
to
Dave's
endure.
Gonna wrap them in his arms.
That it, you know, they're not going to have to endure this day in, day out.
Oh, he hates me.
And and they've learned from it. So their character itself has been built to where hopefully they won't, you know,
and I think
what they did.
But this sounds like marital advice to me.
Yeah, that's good marital advice.
Yes, put a time limit on that junk.
Don't go to bed angry.
Because spouses, sometimes when there's an issue within the marriage, you tend to keep score and to hold on to those things. Even if you forgive your spouse, in the back of your mind, you're thinking,
He does this again.
I bet you he won't take that trash out. I bet you he won't. He won't do it. He's incapable. Instead of wiping the slate clean every time. Now, why wouldn't we extend the same grace to our spouse, the person that we love most in the world, that we chose to spend our life with? Why would we not extend that same grace to them that we would to a lifeguard that we work with? Or at least try to extend that grace, because God does it for us.
And I think it keeps you together as a team, too, because, you know, the other lifeguards probably will judge with the same stick that you do.
Right.
And so, or the measuring piece that you use. And so because you have taken the lead on this is how long it lasts and then that's it, that it's we're moving forward, they, too, can do that. So that keeps that brotherhood, sisterhood group together
and
in a healthy way.
That is the great thing about the ocean rescue team every year is their strength as a team. They're not individuals. They really look out for each other.
That's so cool.
Yeah, they have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when they're in the water, their backup is a teammate, you know, and that person, they can rely on them. Mm-hmm. No one questions the capability, whether it's a 200-pound, you know, swimmer from UNCW or another, you know, a smaller female. They all can do the job and they will come out there and you will not be alone and you will complete the task.
It helps to shoulder the burden of mistakes. You know, the burden's a lot lighter if you can distribute it amongst many shoulders also and not just think, I screwed up. Mm-hmm. You've got a team there. You executed together or you didn't.
Yeah.
I think we kind of stumbled onto some homework from Dave.
Ooh, what's the homework? You're putting him on the spot big
no,
time.
No, I mean, I think he already gave it to us, this 24-hour rule.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as listeners, I want you to think about, you know, what are you holding on to that you could let go?
And really, there are so many things that, is it that important to keep harping on it day in and day out? However, there are some things that, you know, just like anything, that's it. Bye.
Yeah.
You know, your 24-hour rule does not.
Wait, what did he just say?
The 24-hour does not apply.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, does not apply.
Yeah.
Well, those are boundaries that you would put in place that you would go, okay, you're not a safe person to be in relationship with. But I still think on the back end of that, whether they have said to you, I'm really sorry, or that won't happen again, or, you know, I wish I could make that up to you, even though you may have said to that, you know, in your head, we're not going to be in relationship anymore, you still, for you, have to let it go and forgive.
Well, and that's great advice in a personal relationship, or even in an employee-employer, but employee-employer relationship, anything that is out, that does not apply to the 24-hour rule cannot be applied to, they already know ahead of time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, if they're drinking on the job, that's probably not a 24-hour rule.
No, that's an instantaneous rule.
Right. That's right. But they know that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. But it keeps everybody to know that, wow, I really love this job and I can keep on enjoying it the way I did. And I've learned my lesson and move forward.
Yeah.
And just enjoy, because now they're up there doing what they enjoy, watching the water, but not thinking about, and then it takes their mind off of what they really need to
do. Right. So they can be focused.
So it's worked. It's worked over the years. And the guys know it. They know the 24-hour rule.
They know Dave's only a little bit of a jerk.
Just for 24
hours.
Not
all the way.
But that's a real rough 24 hours, I'm telling you. You wouldn't believe the PT they have to do.
Paddling galore.
Oh, no, sugar cookies.
Oh.
Yeah, run in the water, come out, roll in the sand until you're totally coated.
Oh.
Then you're going to do burpees.
He's going to punish him physically.
They got to learn.
And the thing of it is, unfortunately,
chafing,
you can't break them. They're all such great athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going, I got a good workout in.
Yeah.
And then they just jump in and wash all the sand off.
Sugar cookies. That's funny. See, I was thinking he makes them eat 12 sugar cookies and then work out.
Actually, we did that to a guy. We made him eat donuts.
Oh.
Because you couldn't break them. So we said, you are going to eat donuts while everyone else works out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's just a mental breaking.
Yeah.
Okay.
They had to get it some way.
I was thinking, make them eat the donuts, then make them work out. In Frisbee, we used to do this
thing. Puke.
Yeah, it's called the Krispy Kreme Challenge. We played a tournament up there. Where was it? Winston or something? Where the headquarters is? Anyway. You play the tournament, and then you put a team together from your team. We were on a co-ed team called Keel Hall. So we put together two boys, two girls, two males, two females. And the Krispy Kreme Challenge included a baker's dozen of donuts.
Each?
Like 4 pints of whole milk.
Ooh.
A couple of beers. And here's the thing you did. You had to, between the 4 of you, it's a relay. So you sprint down, you sprint back, you tag your partner's hand, and you had to consume all of that stuff.
Oh.
But, you know, so amongst the 4 of you, so there was strategy. Who can take down the donuts?
Yeah.
Who can chug the beer the fastest?
Mm-hmm.
Who is not going to barf from the milk?
Yeah.
Figure it out.
What were you?
Make it happen. The beer. Donuts and beer. I was clearly the donuts and beer, because you can shotgun the beer, you know.
Yeah.
But fun. Total fun. Really glad it happened at the end
of the tournament.
Of the tournament, though. Yeah.
Blah.
Nice.
Well, we just want to thank you, Post Session Podcast listeners, for tuning in to part 2 with Dave Baker. We want to thank you, Dave, for stopping by again.
Thanks, Dave.
I'm honored and humbled all the same. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Cool. And We will post some links at the end of our show notes for this episode. If you like our podcast and want to support us, you can become a Patreon supporter. And there's lots of goodies, a post-session podcast beach towel, an Any Given Morning, that movie that you can get. What? Why are you looking at me funny, Ashley?
Because we don't give them the beach towel.
What if they're a supporter? Don't they get
the beach towel? No, they don't get the beach towel. They get the movie.
Oh.
We're confused about our goodies here.
Anyway, you can like us on Instagram or Facebook, and
we should give them the towel though.
Yeah, if you want to support it, you know,
let's talk about it later.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should do that though.
Oh, you forgot about the stickers.
Oh yeah. The post session podcast stickers. You can also get one of those for being a guest or for supporting us.
Yeah, you just write in. Probably send you.
I think we have a post session podcast coffee mug.
We do.
Okay.
Remember to employ the 24-hour rule this week.
At work, at home, with any relationship, feel free.
Thanks, guys.